Welcome back to the Ryer on YouTube channel, where it is time once again for TR and Coach Smitty, the second installment of the show here on the channel. It is a Thursday night, and we are live right here on Ryer on YouTube. We certainly appreciate each and every one of you jumping on board with us. If you'd like to jump into the show chat, maybe you have a question for the program, maybe you want to get nuts and bolts-ish where the football is concerned, with Coach Jeff Smittelkoffer. I know he'll entertain those questions and those comments thoroughly, as we do here on the program. But Jeff, interesting situation for this Alabama football team coming off what we anticipated to be an easy win over an FCS opponent over Mercer. Maybe real quick, some of the things that you took from that game, was it more of a sort of mental challenge for Alabama coming off the win over LSU on the road, knowing that it's an inferior opponent? I know you've been in those situations as a coach in the past, wondering if your guys are going to respond, not so much in terms of even just the scoreboard, but that standard of play that you always talk about, that regardless of the opponent, you're looking to hit.
Yeah, I was pleasantly shocked. You know, we talked last week about it's a line of scrimmage game, and I thought Alabama pretty much took over that early, right? Yeah, I mean, they really never gave Mercer. There's a couple plays Mercer got early, you know. We talked a little bit today on the one where the running back busted out to the boundary on that one play where they had everybody loaded over on the trip side. But I thought they fit well. I thought their alignments were good. They played fast. You know, a heck of a catch by the Mercer kid over on the fade ball at the pylon. But I mean, you know, that's going to happen. But outside of that, I thought they answered the bell, you know, and you're always worried about that. Right. But I thought they answered the bell and did what they supposed to, got out of there, played a bunch of people, and you know.
Maturity type of check, right? To find out where your team's at. You would think at this late stage in the season that they get it. But I guess you can't always take that for granted either. I mean, we've seen even Nick Saban teams in that very same spot in the past. Georgia Southern certainly comes to mind in the Ten Horn game back in 2011. You know, but that's also where you don't want to see like academy-style offenses either, right? Wing T concepts, triple option in November. That's got to be, especially a defensive coach's worst nightmare. And Mercer having a great season, but I think it did benefit Alabama that conceptually anyway, Mercer right now is more along the lines of what Alabama's seeing defensively on a week-in, week-out basis. And I got to think it helps with carryover to Oklahoma too. You don't have to sort of stop and then restart all over again maybe with some of that stuff.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, as you were talking, the Citadel game comes to mind too. Few years ago where we was 10-0 at halftime or whatever, and Tua had to make some plays in the second half. I think Nick had enough of the option, you know, on his career. But yeah, you know, and the rules have changed now. You can't block it like that, you know, you can't block the option like you used to. So Mercer was kind of like, you know, the spread and some split zone stuff and some outside inside zone, kind of what they see every Saturday, right? And, you know, it was just, I thought that they just kind of dominated the game. I think what they had like 61 yards rushing or something. So, yeah, they were locked in. And you were saying earlier, a lot of young kids, you know, the young kids, the maturity, even the starters, you know, a lot of times those guys take their foot off the gas because they don't really know the standard yet. But I thought overall, though, I thought they answered the bell.
Takeaways, so, man, continue to be a big part of this defense. They did it again on Saturday against Mercer. It doesn't seem like it's opponent dependent, you know, like some defenses are great taking the football away against inferior opponents. Maybe not so much when the stakes move up or higher or the talent level goes up. But it's starting to feel like regardless of who this team plays, they're capable of taking the football away. We saw that again against Mercer. And this is an Oklahoma team coming up that has struggled with that. You know, it's been a problem for Oklahoma this season, especially when you look back to even the last three games. I think Oklahoma has had 8 turnovers in the last 3 SEC games. I'm not going to throw Maine in there in that mix. But It's a good time of year to be playing clean, right? And also maybe forcing your opponents into maybe not playing as clean.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, too, you know, the combination of how Alabama's kind of found themselves a little bit the last three games on offense. And then if you get three turnovers and then you don't turn over the ball at all on offense, you know, the analytics and the numbers are just, you know, increasing your chance of winning the ball game, or no matter who you play, Mercer, Oklahoma, Tennessee, whatever, you know. Well, Tennessee, I think we won the turnover battle and still, you know, just didn't take advantage of the opportunities offensively. But, you know, anyway, so, yeah, I agree with you. The Oklahoma team is they're going to be difficult at home, but they will give it. They'll give it to you. And if they give it to you, you better score, because it's going to be a raucous place to play now. So not going to be easy.
It should be early anyway, right? Saturday night. And that's why it's so important, I'm sure, to go in there. And even if it isn't indicative of the score early in the game, there's this sense anyway that you're in control of things. You're dictating things. And for Oklahoma, I think for Alabama defensively, that starts with the Oklahoma offense, which when you go through the numbers right now, passing offense, and I just talk when I throw these numbers out, Smitty, I talk more in terms of just SEC play. I don't really care what you did against Maine. You know, I don't care what you did against Houston or Tulane. I understand some of those teams are capable opponents, but I just look at SEC data. And right now, Oklahoma coming into this game offensively, 14th in the SEC in passing offense at 175 yards per game in conference play, rushing offense last in the SEC at 97 yards per conference game, scoring offense 15th in the SEC at 15.2 points per game in conference play. So when I think about controlling this game particularly, I probably look more at the Alabama defense setting the tone than anything else.
Yeah, really. The needle kind of swings that way, doesn't it? I mean, you know, you would think you could go in there, but, you know, those stats, it can be a trap, you know what I'm saying? Really can.
Rat poison, right?
Yeah, exactly. The rat poison. That's right. That always comes up. But yeah, it looks like that they've struggled offensively. And then, you know, I've watched Oklahoma a few times this year. I don't know what their identity is. What do they want to do, especially the Auburn game? You know, if Auburn doesn't give it to them three times or four times, Auburn probably beats Oklahoma. But it seems like they've settled in a little bit over the last couple of weeks, but still they struggle moving it.
They do. And even when you talk about moving the football, a lot of that hinges on third down success. Oklahoma last in the SEC in terms of third down conversions in conference play at just 30%, 14th in the SEC in red zone touchdown conversion rate at 40% of the red zone opportunities for the Sooners in conference play inside opponent's 20-yard line going for touchdowns. Now, let me ask you this now, because Oklahoma has had a bye week. OU coming off a bye week. As a defensive coach, how much do you have to concern yourself with some variety, I guess we could say, that you might see from Oklahoma this week? Because it's an Oklahoma offense with Jackson Arnold to start the season, then Michael Hawkins Jr. comes in, then back to Jackson Arnold after Hawkins has a brutal performance early against South Carolina about a month ago now, in October. How much, I guess, is too much that you can kind of consume yourself with in terms of trying to get ready for an offense like this? How much do you just have to lean on, okay, this is what we think they are? Because you said it, they seem to be identityless throughout this season, but they do have a couple of quarterbacks that can do some different things behind center.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. It's like, I think, you know, teams are going to settle in who they are, but right now you don't know who they are. So you got to let your players know, hey, listen, they may have a wrinkle here or two, and it may take us a series. You know, they're probably got the same philosophy that Alabama has right now. Stay out of your third and seven pluses, right? And give yourself a chance on third and be in third and three and third and four, and second and eight is not all that bad, you know, and that that's what I would think. But yeah, and then, you know, and hey, you always got to be aware of something, a trick play. You know, we always coached our guys, hey, the best time to run a trick play is first play of the game. That's when everybody's nervous and, you know, your eyes might not be in the right place. And, you know, so, you know, I remember in what it was, it 02 when we played them, we opened it with Franchione. We opened up with an onside kick.
Yeah.
You know, so
you might get that from Oklahoma Saturday night, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So I just think you just got to be ready, you know, ready for everything, but really prepare what they do the best. And, you know, by game, what is this, 10, 11, whatever game it is, you got enough film to stop, you know, what you need to stop and focus on what you need to, you know, focus on. So
for you as a defensive guy and knowing that Oklahoma's had these struggles, are you aggressive from the outset on Saturday night against an offense like this? Or are you more of, hey, we're going to get in kind of our base stuff and we're going to see how it plays out, you know, with Oklahoma on the script early? How much of a stance do you take in terms of trying to dictate to them, understanding that they've had their struggles, but maybe also trying to protect yourself from giving up the kind of big play that sparks them, right? In terms of mindset and psyche and gives them the lift they need playing at home. How do you go about that?
I think you, Coach Womack, Coach Roach, I think you got to find the matchups, right? Especially along the defensive front. You know, where's your matchup? And, you know, I think down a distance determines a lot of that. You know, there's some run blitzes that you can, you know, it may look like you're really being aggressive, but it's the basic run stuff, run blitzes, or, you know, until they, in fact, you know, I would make that guy beat me throwing it. You know, let's stop the run and see what, because they're just, you know, they're what, 95.
They're depleted at wide receiver right now.
They are.
Still.
95 and they have yards a game running. Right. Yeah. So, yeah, I would find the matchups, especially interior wise, and, you know, play some games like they have all year. You know, they played a bunch of ends and, you know, Tech's stunts and with the ends and the mm-hmm. T and stunts and, you know, keep doing what you're doing, but you know, I wouldn't overthink it. You know, not until you need it to.
Yeah, Kane Womack doesn't seem overly reliant on numbers in terms of pressures. I don't know, maybe you've seen something different, but he does like his games up front, doesn't he? The twists and some of that stuff. It seems like Alabama, maybe more so than even under Nick Saban, if there's one of those changes that we've seen, maybe it's been up front with that approach.
Yeah, for sure. Especially in the close sets, like when he's got a tight end and close set trips away.
Explain that, though. What close set when you say that?
Well, like if you got a tight end and trips to the away from the tight end. And, right. So anything like that, you'll see him do that a lot. He'll rip C gap a lot or even take that in, rip the B, and then bring the corner off the edge and roll it off behind him. You see a lot of that. But, yeah, he's – you know, well, Damani the other day came off the edge and caused that fumble. That was on a close set, you know, off the boundary. So, you know, I just think that he tries to confuse them up front and get a guy loose. And all it takes is one to get guy loose to muddy it up, you know. And I think that's probably where they're focused at, because I think they have a pretty good advantage. I know Oklahoma's got a couple of that guard, the offensive guard is an all SEC guy,
good at the center position, I think, but it's been rough for Oklahoma up front, man. Yes, that was a question mark for the Sooners going into the season, and it has played out that way. We've got Suit RTR checking in here in the comments. He says this defense hates giving up points. Talk to me, Jeff, about, in your opinion, how far this defense has come, though, in the last month, because they were giving up some points. You know, they were giving up some yards, but boy, I thought even against Tennessee, they had shown signs of improvement, but then coming out of Tennessee, there were some rough spots. I guess what we're finding out too, Jeff, is that in real time, you may not understand how much improvement your opponents are making too. Because look at South Carolina offensively right now.
Yeah.
You know, that was thought to be kind of a disappointing performance against South Carolina in Tuscaloosa, but now South Carolina is scoring 30 plus, it seems like.
Right.
They did it against Oklahoma, now benefited from some takeaways from the Sooners, and then did it against Missouri last week. So how much does that change, do you think, week to week?
Oh, I think it changes. I think it changes a lot. And I think, you know, at Vanderbilt, the sky was falling, right? 30, yep. whatever week, 35, they gave up, you know. And, of course, you know, Vanderbilt has pretty much scored on everybody they played, though. You know, and like you said about South Carolina, you know, South Carolina, Vanderbilt's at a little bit of the wall now. But, yeah, I think they're one of the most impressive stops they got all year when they held LSU to the field goal on the first drive down.
Yeah, it was big.
That was huge. You know, they let one get loose down to the three or whatever and held them to a field goal there. And it was just like, after that, it was lights out. You know, their fits were good. I think they're just getting confident in what they're doing. It looks like they give you the same look pre-snap. We talked a little bit about that last week. And I just think he's more of a front seven guy, where Coach Saban was more of a back. Would yeah. run a lot of games with the guys in the back end, you know. So anyway, so that's kind of where I think. I just think that they're just kind of settling in. And if you're going to beat them, you're going to have to, you know, they seem to bend a little bit, but they don't seem to – their red zone defense is pretty good.
If there's a concern you have for this Alabama defense right now, Smitty, where is that?
Well, I think you got to start with the secondary, right? They're just so young. I think Hubbard – you know, kind of shirted it up a little bit, but they're still young at that one corner spot over there. And then on the backside of the hash, especially if they go nickel, and they've been hit with some injuries there. But I was a little bit worried at the beginning of the year with their depth up front, but some of those guys have come a long way. And
tightened up that rotation? Does it feel that way? Because they played a ton of people early.
Yeah, they do.
Does it feel like maybe they've sort of limited that scope to 4, 5, 6 guys now?
I think so. I think they're good. At least five, you know. I think, and what I think we talked about this last week too. I'm shocked at how many people play in the back end.
That's been surprising.
Yeah. I mean, because usually, I mean, Coach Saban, he had his 4 or 5 dudes.
He didn't trust that many guys. No, he didn't trust them.
No.
And most defensive coaches don't, right? I mean,
right.
That's where you can give it up in a hurry.
Yeah.
If you're not right on the back end.
Yeah. They, you know, you screw up on the back end, it's a touchdown. You screw up front, 9-yard game, you know? So it's hard to put your finger on exactly how their rotations are, but I tell you what, it's effective. It's really effective. So, you know, it's the first. And then of course they don't look like they move the three and the three backers. I mean, Jihad and Deontay, they stay in just about every snap.
You know? Jefferson has worked his way into that mix.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Now with Q out, especially, I think that maybe takes on, what do you think, added importance with Quay Rousseau had a nice interception last week. Yonzi Pierre is still a young player. I think that showed up. You talked about the back getting out of the back door there on that big gain for Mercer last week. It looked like maybe Yonzi was a little aggressive in his approach, but you also pointed out to me earlier today, kind of the alignment for Alabama put that defense in a position where if one guy doesn't make the play, then the potential's there for a big play. And it's not just exclusive to what we see from Alabama. It sounds like other defenses are kind of taking that approach too.
Yeah, it does. And then, you know, that one formation where trips, where everybody's it's 4v3. It seems like that's been the last 2 or 3 years. I don't know if they all talk about it in the off season and it's affected, but it just really, you're just really, really weak to the boundary or nub side. And that's what happened the other day. Once we got pursuit, and the pursuit all, he just bounced it out back on the backside. And I think Malachi Moore had to push him out of bounds for about 17 yards. So, and usually, cause they flipped the corner over into the trip side, you know, the other corner was over here on the trip side. And I was like, wow. So, you know,
and but the receiver that corner was up on was dead. You pointed out to me was on the line with the outside receiver on too. So he was effectively ineligible, right?
Correct. And well, and you know, I'm not in their film room. So maybe there was a you know, they saw something there. Maybe there was fast screen over there, a tunnel coming back underneath.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and they just ran, you know, and it was a busted play in fairness.
Yeah.
But boy, if you look, you know, I think sometimes we were talking about it today at school. I think sometimes coordinators don't take into account that you can miss tackles. And if you miss tackles, which to me is the hardest thing in football, open field tackle. Yeah. And if you miss a tackle, it's a chunk play. You know? Yeah. And kind of way our offense is predicated, right? You know, yeah. I mean, same thing.
We see Kalen DeBoer take advantage of those same situations. Nick Sheridan take advantage of those same type of formations for Alabama on the offensive side of the ball. Our friend Tex Tider checking in here in the show chat. He notes that early 2000 games versus Oklahoma seemed pivotal. Pulling out those games could have turned the tide. Yeah. You know, I was in Norman. You talked about that 2002 game with Dennis Franchione. That was a hell of a football game, Jeff. And then you go from Fran to Shula in 2003. I give Alabama a lot of credit in 2003. Played that Oklahoma team extremely tough there in Tuscaloosa. That was a season in which Alabama hosted Oklahoma and LSU in the same season. And that LSU team under Nick Saban in 2003 was one of the best visiting teams I've maybe ever seen at Bryant Denny Stadium. That was a hell of a football team.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. And that was not good times at Capstone then. You know, there was a lot of, you know, and if I remember Lane Bearden, didn't he punt with a torn ACL?
Yeah, he had an ACL, I think, pretty much 01, 02 or one of those seasons for sure. Yeah, he did.
Tyler Watts was the quarterback, and we're in that game. I think the ball slipped out of his hand, and they get a late touchdown. We had the ball down three or something, and they scoop and score. It was in the one in Norman. That was wild. But
I'll say this, man. Fran gets a lot of heat, and understandably so. But when that offense was right, that was a fun offense to watch with Tyler and some of those kind of veer option principles and even getting into Shaud Williams a little bit on the smoke draw and – there was actually some good stuff to kind of come out.
Ahmad Galloway had a good big game.
Yes, he did.
Yeah. So, yeah, those are all good. Those were all the guys that came in with Chris, and they were all there in '99 when I was there. All good guys.
And they had some defensive linemen in that stretch too.
For sure,
that could go.
Yeah.
For sure, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
Hey, but let's talk some Oklahoma defense because that is an area where this OU team can perhaps push Alabama out of its comfort zone. You know, you look at the statistical rankings and you think, well, rushing defense, OU eighth in the SEC, giving up 125 yards per game in SEC play. Passing defense, kind of the same thing at ninth. This is a passing defense for OU that has given up 10 touchdown passes in six SEC games, picked off just two. Scoring defense 12th in the SEC at 28.5. But I guess, Jeff, you got to think about it too from the perspective of as bad as this OU offense has been, that's probably had something to do with even the defensive numbers that we've seen from Oklahoma so far this season.
No, sure. I'm sure their minutes are playing so many minutes because, you know, OU is a lot of three and outs and punts and having to play a lot. And you know, with Venables, you better be shored up on the offensive line because he's going to bring people from everywhere. Always has when he was at Clemson and they were on their run. And, yeah, it's going to be I'm sure the offensive line coach, they've had in the offensive line staff with the backs and where they're fitting because they're going to bring it, you know.
Now will they bring true numbers, Jeff, or will they simulate it some? Will they mix just bring five or more?
I think they're going to be kind of like what we do at times. You know, you get up there and you show and you get the O-line communicating and whatever, and then they'll back out, they'll bring it, they'll play twist games. I think they're still basing out of a 3-4, if I'm not mistaken. I think that's kind of Venable's deal. So, yeah, he's innovative. He's going to bring it. You know, I'd be shocked if he didn't.
It always seems like he's got a linebacker, right? James Skalski, who I know you were familiar with from your coaching days. And now Danny Stutzman, and really the linebacker level in general. It just seems like Venable's always got that guy at the linebacker position, at least one.
Yeah. That was, Ben Watson at Clemson, wasn't it? That was in 15, 16, whenever. Yeah. So he's got to have that one guy that's kind of the, you know, that gets everybody lined up and gets them, you know, communicated. But I'd be shocked if I don't see Venables playing much base. You know what I mean? He's going to he's going to put those people out on the edge, and he's going to cover them up. And there may be, I mean, I think there'll be some plays downfield if you can, you know, if you can get a one-on-one matchup, you know, there'll be some plays to be made.
Chad Anderson chiming in here with the Boz. Boz predates Venables a little bit, Chad. Yeah, but, yeah, you know, I think Skalski, by the way, is a grad assistant at Oklahoma. So, is that?
Yeah. I ran into him about a month and a half ago here. He works out at the gym. He's going to try to play some.
Okay.
Some like arena ball, but he wants to go into the coaching ranks. So, yeah, he's out at Oklahoma GA and with Coach Venables. So, yeah.
There you go. There you go. Firsthand account from Coach Schmitty. So when you think about this Oklahoma offense and you think about kind of where they rank in these different numbers and how important explosive plays are now in today's football, especially, Schmitty, OU 15th in the SEC offensively in terms of long scrimmage plays. So 64 plays, an SEC play of 10 yards or more. That, you know, that comes out to about, I guess, 10, but that only gets you 15th these days. So do you think there's an over-dependence maybe on explosive plays? Are coordinators, are offenses just not as willing to kind of take 4 or 5 yards as much as they used to be? What's your thought on that? It's you hear every coach talk about it. Got to get more explosive plays. We got to create more explosive plays. Nick Saban talked about it a lot.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I probably straddle the fence on that a little bit. I know this. The last three games, Alabama hadn't had near as many explosive plays, and they've played way better. That's ball control. They run the ball, and then they wear you out in the second half, kind of like, you know, they lean on the run game a lot. I'm a little bit, yeah, I think you got to take your shots to keep people out of the box.
Right.
You know, if you got your shot, you got to back them up a little bit. But to me, there was nothing more demoralizing when an offensive coordinator was patient and would take his 3, 4, 7, 2, 9, 3, and just all the way down, you're pulling your hair out. You know, I mean, if you can, a lot of offensive coordinators get impatient, and that's when they get in trouble. You know, I think those guys, you know, and I think Sheraton's done a good job of the last 3 or 4 weeks. Even in the South Carolina game, you could see he was trying to be a little bit more, you know, not take your shots as much, you know. And I just think that especially with the people Alabama's got, I think they can lean on you a little bit early. Those body blows, man, those are, whew,
they're real.
Yeah,
it felt like Tennessee, maybe they tried to eat the elephant in one bite, right? They weren't willing or didn't feel like they could sort of just take a few bites at a time and work their way towards finishing the meal there, so to speak. But, yeah, and look, when you talk about this Oklahoma defense, what they don't do is give up explosive plays. They're third in the SEC in conference play in terms of allowing 10 yards or more, just giving up 2 runs of 30 yards or more. So if you're thinking about some of those explosives you've gotten from Jalen here again of late, especially in the LSU game, I don't think they're going to be as easy to come by. And I know you look at South Carolina putting 35 on them with Lenora Sellers at the quarterback position, maybe some things like that. But Jackson Dart isn't a Redwood. And this is a defense that held Ole Miss to, what, 26? And so, you know, you may not get the chunks from the quarterback position that you did a couple weekends ago.
Yeah, for sure. And that tells you that the kids trust the scheme if they're not giving up those big chunks, right? They're where they're supposed to be, right? So as much as he likes to manipulate the fronts and bring people, you know, it creates an opportunity. But, you know, obviously their guys have got a pretty good handle on it. And they've, like you said earlier, with them struggling offensively, they've played a lot more defense than a lot of other teams. So I think some of those stats can be a little bit misleading, you know. And, you know, if you got
not just play more defense, but put in bad situations, bad, right?
Positions, that's right, with the turnovers.
Short fields, things like that. I mean, it all goes into that pot, I'm sure.
Yeah, for sure. And then it, you know, I'm sure they're a little fragile mentally, but you know as well as I know, in this league, you hang around, you let them hang around three quarters, and you get to the 12-minute mark in the fourth quarter, and you're up by three, and here we go. You know,
and it's senior night, Saturday night. Yeah. By the way,
right? Yeah. So
here we go with a comment from the Godfather of the SEC. We already like that nickname, don't we, Smitty?
Absolutely.
Anything he says goes, in our opinion, at this point. If Alabama brings the heat, Jackson just isn't that good, in my opinion, when he's rattled. Well, I think that's true, Jeff, or Smitty, of really any quarterback, right? But it kind of goes back to confidence and the scar tissue, too, that a quarterback accumulates over the course of the season. Sometimes as a result of taking excessive hits, sometimes from the result of maybe being told that you're going to the sideline, that you're not playing well enough, you're being replaced. Guys all handle that differently, it seems like.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, if you bring people, a lot of times, if you're going to play a loose zone behind it, there's zone behind it. You don't have to play man every time you bring people. I mean, I know Womack will bring people and he'll play a loose zone behind it and they'll rally up, you know? So, yeah, it just depends on the mindset and how these guys are built mentally. Those quarterbacks, they, you know, if they're coached up and you bring it and you miss,
yeah,
you better know where your, you know, where your help's coming from, because that's the key, you know, and leverage it, you know, and you're going to give up some plays, but you know, I would see what he could do, what they, like we talked earlier, I would really see how we handle the lines of scrimmage.
Yeah, if you can win with four, why do anything else? You know, right. If you can open the game and like LSU, it looks like early on you're going to be able to win with four, why expose yourself in some areas? That being said, I guess the other side, Smitty, is that OU is so depleted at wide receiver right now. If you don't feel like they really have guys that can hurt you, I know the instinct or the thought is, hey, let's just go get this guy with five or six. I guess there's a couple different ways to look at that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, there's ways to do it. It's just like, you know, where are you going to – you kind of pick your poison, right? You know, and these guys, you know, OU's got film on Bama, and they'll challenge some of those young, you know, those young corners, and, you know, we'll, you know, hopefully we can, you know, they can get there and create some problems. But, you know, you talk about that. I thought Tennessee relied too much the other night just on their four. I mean, Beck was clean a lot of the night. And, you know, he's the kind of
guy. It's almost like Tennessee got rope-a-dope, though. They got off to the good start. Yeah. And it felt like Beck was going to have another Beck game for this season anyway. And then when he hit the switch, to your point, it didn't seem like Tennessee ever adjusted to that.
Yeah, they just kind of like and I guess they just thought their front four and Georgia's pretty good up front on the O-line when they're healthy, you know.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, they were just, you know, they didn't even come giddy, you know, after they were giving up big plays to the tight end, especially down the seams, you know. So
did you think Bobo did a nice job, though, of kind of using the way Tennessee plays defense against Tennessee? Because they love to run. I mean, they love to look at the football, it seems like, Jeff, and they like to run. I mean, they are aggressive.
Yeah,
and I thought Bobo caught him a couple times, I thought, with that.
For sure. I thought that was one of the better games. And that in the second half of the Bama game, he called a good game too with some of the screens and stuff that he set up. But I thought that was his best game, his complete game, you know, of the year catching. But you're right. Tennessee's super, super aggressive. But, man, I just thought after they got 17-17 or 24-17, I thought they would bring it. And they just kind of, you know, I thought that they – kind of like what we're talking about with Bama and Oklahoma. Can your front four handle them, you know? And
right.
Yeah, once it got two possession, it was over.
Well, Smitty, as we get out of here, I need your key guys for Alabama on Saturday night. Give me one or two on offense, and then we'll move to the defensive side of the ball.
I think it could be a big night for Haynes this week on and Jam. I really do. I think that the offensive line is kind of finding their way. And, you know, they've looked, you know, I think that those guys could really control the games. Those are two talented guys that can punish you. Defensively, you know, those guys inside, like I've talked about the whole night, I just think that those guys, those one or two, Latham and Pierre, when he comes in, and, you know, some of those guys,
Keenan,
Tim Smith.
James Smith is a young guy that looks like he's been coming on of late.
Yeah. Overton can be huge against this, you know, and I just think that that's where it's going to be won, because like you said, we have an advantage with all the receivers that they have out and hurt. And I just think that those guys could, I'd be a little disappointed if they didn't control the line of scrimmage. You know, I think that they can go in there and do that. But
Oklahoma does have a capable tight end. We've seen that be problematic, not just for Alabama. It feels like in some ways, Jeff, watching college football, NFL football, it's been sort of a renaissance year for the tight end. Maybe a year in which the tight end position has even gone to another level as a defensive guy in what you've done. How problematic can that be? I mean, that guy.
Yeah. The chain mover, right? He's probably not going to take it 60, but he's going to get you 11 on 3rd and 8. You know, I mean, look what happened Saturday night with Georgia.
Yeah.
You know, their tight ends got loose and big plays.
All three of them did.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's a nightmare. And then you got a guy that can, you know, like Dupree and all our guys that we got, they can block their threats in the pass game. You know, it's a unique, and especially the way they play them now. You know, they just don't put their hand in the ground. They're back there at H. They're running split zone. They're running powers. They're running. Then the next thing you know, they slip out the back and they're in the flats by themselves because they're so hard to find.
Run that slice action. And,
oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Get you in the flat. And really, let's say OU really loads up on Jalen in terms of accounting for him in the run game. That means somebody else has got to make OU pay, right? And that's where I would think a position like tight end, or even if you throw it to the backs, and it doesn't have to be vertical throws, does it? Or intermediate throws. There's ways you can hit teams in the flat, on circle routes, things like that, that, you know, they can't account for everybody if they load up on the quarterback.
Right. Well, I think the last two or three games, starting with the LSU game, they kind of got Jalen in a rhythm by throwing little, you know, dot passes and sit routes and inside the backers, and, you know, and it kind of gets him in a little bit of a rhythm. And then, you know, then they hit Ryan Anderson on the flat.
Ryan Williams,
fake with the flat. Ryan Williams on the flat. So against Mercer, you know, that was a 7-yard throw, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, if you're going to, that's where I think they can hurt. You know, McElwain was real good at that when he was a OC at Bama.
That LSU championship game plan comes to mind. He would wear you out
if you were, you know, on with 4 and 5, Kevin Norwood, with people like that, you know.
Chris Smelly.
Yeah, for sure.
Or maybe it was Brad. I probably have it wrong. One of the Smellies. Yeah, getting old, man. Yeah. Getting old and it's late.
I hear you.
Too many quarter beers for Jeff and I back in the day, too.
For sure.
Oh, Smitty, it's always a lot of fun, man.
Appreciate you
taking the time. This is the way we basically talk, you know?
Yeah.
We just catch up a lot of times. Maybe it's a little more colorful at times, but, you know, this is the Ryer on YouTube version. And if you've enjoyed the program and you haven't subscribed to the channel as of yet, go ahead and hit that subscribe button right now. Hit that notification bell while you're at it. That way you're alerted to our content as it drops right here on Ryer on YouTube. And a thumbs up is always appreciated as well. You traveling this weekend, Smitty?
Yeah, going to Clinton, South Carolina.
Yes, sir.
The home of the Presbyterian Blue Hose.
Hose.
Yes. Yep. So, Butler's there for their last game. And so me and the wife are dividing and conquer. Barry made the playoffs.
Won the conference. Is that right?
The conference, playing Maryville at a home game. So yeah,
congrats to Carson Schmidlkoffer.
Yeah, so we're dividing and conquering this week. And the Baird, I don't know if Baird, I don't know if Butler's going to get in or not. They're going to be 10-2. They're going to have to get a at large.
Couple of good seasons though for your squads, the Killer Bees.
Good seasons. Been a lot of fun.
And Barry. Yeah.
Yeah. For sure. It's been a lot of fun. So
yeah. But, well, we will catch up next week. with OU in the wake of this Alabama football team and then the Iron Bowl. Maybe we'll get into some memories too.
Yeah. Oh boy.
Jeff and I could probably go back a ways on some of those.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, Smitty. All right, safe travels to you and Keeley this weekend. Good luck to the boys. And always appreciate you here on Ryer on YouTube. And we'll do it again real soon.
Yeah, man. Glad to do it. It's a lot of fun.
For Coach Smitty, Travis, thanking you for joining us right here on Ryer on YouTube. Coming up right after this show, it is Second Helping Live with Brent Beard. So we're going straight from TR and Smitty into Second Helping. So be sure to check that out as well. Coming up right here on Ryer on YouTube.